it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 336. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about Gabe Kapler a little bit. We're going to ask the question, who is your favorite cult Philly of all time? We're not talking about baseball players who played for the Phillies and then later joined a cult. We're talking about something else entirely.
I have to change my answer.
You'll have a few minutes, so that's good. Okay. Atlanta Braves have signed a big free agent. We'll tell you who it is and what that might mean for the Phillies, and some interesting news about the injured list next year, and a cool story about Japan honor and terrible pitching. We'll get into all that coming up here in the next few minutes. Joining me, as they do every Sunday night, are Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs and Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin, how you doing, pal?
Pretty good. Every time you look away from baseball right now, it gets a lot worse. So I'm interested what the next mutation holds.
Yeah. Yeah, Liz, I mean, I think we're going to get into one of those awful stories here right off the bat, so that's fun, right?
Wow, I can't wait. This is why I decided to love baseball, for all of this. The elimination of the minor leagues, sign stealing, rampant misogyny. It's exactly what I hoped for when I was a little girl.
Oh, I forgot about the elimination of the minor league leagues.
Remember that? So the list came out today, folks. 42 affiliates from around the country. A plan, you could read about it in the New York Times, a plan hatched by people who came from the Astros organization.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
Orioles and Brewers.
Now, yeah.
The Astros, Orioles, and Brewers all came from the Astros organization originally. These are hundreds and hundreds of jobs. These are not even the players, because they're people, humans, who work at these jobs year-round.
Yeah.
They're people who depend on it for seasonal employment. These are affiliates that are part of cities and towns where this is where someone's love of baseball is born.
It's so transparently bad for baseball. And when you said, oh, this was come up by... I assumed you were going to say a man in a Zeppelin with an eye patch cackling as he flies over City Hall.
As like it so happens, actually, that's what the Astros have turned into.
That's what he looks. That's what the owner of Jim Crane looks like. Yeah. It's just so it's not even like trying to make it sound good. It's just like, yeah, well, we thought we found a way to make more money. So we thought.
Let's cancel baseball
in a lot of small towns.
That's really what it is. It's an effort to, quote unquote, streamline, to eliminate, you know, franchises that are too far afield from others, that have bad facilities and et cetera. Like there is at least one or two minor league affiliates who recently paid a lot of money to maintain in their town these affiliates. By building new facilities and other things that are on this list. Like, this is bad, and you should, if you don't like the way this sounds, like, there are three affiliates in Pennsylvania. I think it's the Erie Seawolves, the State College Senators, and the third that I'm forgetting. But yeah, it's not good. If you don't like it, actually, I have no recourse. Call your state senators, call your local representative, call any lawmaker you can. Major League Baseball depends on these ghouls that we've elected to maintain their antitrust status. So call them and state your anger.
Yeah, I mean, but minor league baseball is I don't even know if it's most, but maybe it is most. How a majority of Americans get their baseball, because, you know, a large number of Americans surprisingly don't live in a major city. There are many American people who don't live in a major city. I mean, at least I've been looking at some maps, ladies.
John got his maps out.
I got my maps, you know, and I had them all laid out. And I noticed that there were huge swaths of this country that were were not located in major metropolitan urban areas. So,
I'm gonna need some proofs on this, John.
Well, I'll work it all out on Twitter, and it'll be part of the 30-point tweet tomorrow. And you know, I'll have this all out for everybody. But minor league baseball is a beautiful thing, and especially as major league baseball gets more expensive. You know, even going someplace like Nationals Park, where the fans really don't care most of the time, you know, it still is expensive to go. Whereas, you know, and it's also great for little kids, you know, who you're just trying to ease into baseball. You know, you take them to a minor league game to kind of warm up, and they can leave in the third inning, and you're not going to be out, you know, $150. So it's, you know, it's minor league baseball is a part of what makes America great, you know, and it's crappy. There's no doubt about the fact that it's absolutely lousy what's going on. And, you know, I think one of the other things that has even gotten lousier over the last couple of days is this Astros sign-stealing story is growing even more. It came out on Saturday, I guess it was, that not only, you know, do we have the video out there now where you can hear players banging on a trash can when they're getting looks at what the what signs the catcher is putting down. I mean, most of you who are listening have seen those videos at this point. But now we're also getting emails that appear to show club officials from the Astros asking their scouts to be looking at ways that they can try and steal signs. And I think from one of the emails was written from an Astros executive. It says, "One thing in specific we're looking for is picking up signs coming out of the dugout," the email sender wrote in a message from August of 2017, the year the Astros won the World Series. "What we're looking for is how much we can see, how we could log things, if we need cameras, binoculars, etc. So go to the game, see what you can or can't do, and report back your findings." And so I guess, you know, I've often thought that, you know, if you've figured out a way as a player without using technology to kind of steal signs, to me, I think that's okay. But using technology, having a center field camera, having somebody in a lap with a laptop inside the clubhouse banging on a trash can is obviously something else. Liz, where are you at on these latest rumors? I mean, obviously it's not surprising, but does this ramp it up at all to you, or is it just kind of more the same?
I think it definitely ramps it up. I mean, I would like for all of us to just appreciate for a moment how much people hate the Astros. Because in the last 3 weeks, we've gotten an unending torrent of bad stories from people inside the organization and most likely recent employees finally opening their mouths because they've had enough and now they feel like they can at least say something. Like, that's the thing, because this was an email that Kevin Goldstein, who is an assistant to the GM and the former director of pro scouting, that he sent to scouts, so many of which have been fired by the Astros because they downsized their scouting department and replaced it largely with cameras and computers. So it's actually interesting that none of this information has come forward till now. Yeah. How did it take so long? Like, this is bad. This is all bad.
That is something that struck me, is that like every day, when I say every time you look away from this, it gets worse. I mean, I'm really not even exaggerating. Over the weekend and over the past week, it just feels like, I'm not saying anybody wasn't doing their jobs as far as getting the story out there, because obviously this is sensitive material and it's going to get out there when it gets out there, if it's going to get out there. I'm sure a lot of shady stuff like this goes on that we don't know about. And obviously one of the threads of this is that the Astros aren't the only team doing it, but they're the team that's, you know, doing it this way, and they're the team that got caught first. And
reputationally, they're so obvious.
And reputationally, they're the team that you would suspect more than any others, apparently, in the baseball world. But that's what's kind of like every time you look away, it gets worse. It's because this is like branching and spiraling out of control. And you know, we got what reports today in the 2017. Investigation about the 2017 ALCS.
I wrote about that. Yeah.
Yankees complained that a series of whistles were being used, and they were like, "Yeah, it was nothing." Well, it turned out actually, no, there was something to that. And now you got like Carlos Beltran just started a new job in New York, and he's already being dragged into this for good reason. Apparently, he was one of the originators of a sign stealing system, or supporters of it when he was with the Astros. And Mets are just like, "Hey, don't look at us. This isn't our problem, at least not yet."
Answer me this question: Jeff Luhnow and Alex Cora have said nothing. Carlos Beltran will not stop giving quotes. Have you? I read stories in The Athletic and in like the Newsday and in the Post. It is just like actual words he said to reporters about this. Why would he do that?
He obviously doesn't think he's done anything wrong.
Right.
My God.
That's the only thing I can think of.
And that was going to be my original point, is that this stuff seems like it's just been sitting there. And it's just been sitting there for somebody to kick one rock and find it. And then, you know, it needed a Mike Fiers to step forward and be like, hey, look, this is what's been going on. I hate it and it sucks. And I'm not the only one who thinks it sucks. But obviously in a situation like this where a lot of upper level people are involved, a lot of, you know, jobs could be on the line, careers could be influenced, people are going to take a second before they say something. But the way the information has kind of just flowed out, and investigations by, you know, journalists or people stepping up and saying like, oh yeah, this definitely was going on, it's just been sort of a steady flow since the initial story broke. And you know, it sucks. Cheating pokes holes in everything. Stuff that's held up because of this basic understanding, the basic level of like dignity or understanding that kind of like holds baseball together. It stops guys from being like, why don't I just take my bat to first base and hit the first baseman in the leg with it. And so he can't catch the ball. Why don't I just do that? What are they going to do? So even though stuff like this must happen all the time, us knowing about it kind of ruins this illusion that any of this is taken seriously by teams we root for. Like, it's not a game full of nostalgia or majesty. It's just another system that scheming white collar douche bros learned how to hack. And that's kind of what we're looking at.
I gotta wonder what it's like to be a fan of the Astros right now. You know what I mean?
Oh, please don't do this. Look them up on the internet.
Yeah, I know. They're not handling this well.
They've handled nothing well. Let's not. Astros, different, distinct Astros fans that are on the internet that love to find people who talk their team. I'm sorry. It's enormous. They are out there and they are very insecure.
No doubt about it. I mean, it's because this is their one world championship that they've ever won. And now it's all got a big black piece of, you know, big black piece of cloth all over it. You know what I mean? Like it's been cheapened, and they, you know, you can't give it to the Dodgers in retrospect. You know, they won the World Series, but in a lot of people's minds, there's always going to be an asterisk next to it. And so you've got to, you know, it just kind of sucks. There's really no other way. I don't feel bad for Astros fans. I mean, certainly by the way they're reacting, but I mean, if this was a Philadelphia story, Philadelphia fans, I'm sure would be reacting in very similar ways.
You know, there was one guy.
I'm not defending the Astros. By the way, the Astros fans who are being, you know, who are being a-holes on Twitter. By the way,
I do know a nice Astros fan. He's a wonderful dude. So it doesn't apply to all of them.
Yeah. I've seen plenty of rational, I guess is the word, Astros fans, Astros writers, talking about this. And but like then you just, yeah, there was one guy I saw who was like, clearly this was so far of a reach that it was like, I guess the only excuse for coming up with this would be senility. Otherwise it's completely like indoctrinated backwards nonsense. And I think he was like a former Astros writer and a big Astros fan of some kind of whatever. And he was saying like, well, if the Astros are getting investigated for this, I'm sorry. The Astros are getting investigated for this. Where are they going to investigate the Oakland Athletics banging on a drum during their games? Cause that's clearly, that's clearly a system of cheating I've been talking about for years. Oh my God. Like you gotta
it's like the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia crazy board with string with Charlie in front of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just the latest thing that's let everyone show their the ugliest side of the sport, and in some cases the ugliest sides of themselves. And how many more hits like this is baseball going to take as it cancels all of its deeply accessible minor league franchises?
And let's not forget what we were talking about a month ago, the change in the baseball, which literally everyone has forgotten about because, of course, we're not playing baseball right now. But like my colleague Tim Brown wrote yesterday that Major League Baseball has lost the trust of its fans, the trust that it knows how to do anything right, that it knows anything about what's going on.
Yeah, Rob Manfred's not running a tight ship here.
Well, you know, you forget that the owners sign his checks.
Yeah.
And so he can say whatever he wants, but his job is to put up a good front for fans while the owners essentially let their teams do whatever they want. Like, I saw a tweet from someone saying, you know, they've owners have just stepped all over Manfred. It seems like no one's listening to him. Like, yeah, that's kind of the point. At some point in the development of baseball, the commissioner stopped being a leader for the owners and teams and started being the guy who controls baseball for the fans. So everyone stops looking at what the owners are doing.
Yeah. Well, this is certainly another black eye on baseball right now. And, you know, it's, you know, as the weeks go along here in the offseason, we're going to talk a lot about, you know, Phillies moves and stuff like that. There's just no Phillies news this week. And all these different headlines are really just not putting baseball in a great light. It's making it a pretty depressing sport to cover at the moment. So this is just, we'll continue to watch this story because I don't know that anything concrete is going to come out of it. There might be suspensions for certain people, but certainly, you know, I think we'll continue to dance around the burning embers of the Houston Astros reputation over the next few weeks. You guys didn't get a chance to talk about the hiring of Gabe Kapler by the Giants. I mentioned it a little bit on Hitting Season 335 and kind of shared my thoughts on Kapler going out to San Francisco. But man, was I wowed by the negative reaction to his hiring out there. I mean, I know he's not the most popular guy in the world, but I did not think it would be possible for him to get off to a worse start with a fan base than he did in Philadelphia. But, oh boy, do these San Francisco fans not like Gabe Kapler. What is, I mean, obvious there are reasons, but, you know, were you guys surprised by the level of animosity and the level of angry skepticism that was coming from Giants fans?
See, I knew there was going to be a silence. I almost said, "Liz, do you want to go first?" I'm sorry. We're not good when you open.
I know.
It up to
I usually
both of us.
I usually pinpoint a person to go. Yeah,
we talked a lot, so I'm like, you should shut up and let.
We're like hamsters. You got to turn a little light on for one of us, and then we'll react. Yeah, or you know, get some instincts on my end. Like Liz said, she did just talk, so I guess it would technically be a sign for me to go. So okay, yes, I was.
One of these days, this three-person podcast, we're gonna nail this formula. We're gonna crush it.
What'd you say? 335 episodes.
That's right.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
No, I was definitely surprised. I think when your team hires a new manager, you can talk yourself into getting into it because I think a lot of people consciously or unconsciously realize that this doesn't really mean anything yet. And I think we've had more and more conversations as the years have gone on about what a manager actually does and how much impact they actually have. So it's more about how well you know. Your excitement level is based on how well you know the person coming into the job. And so, like, I mean, there was a time where we were getting ourselves pumped up over Ryan Sandberg or getting pumped up because Pete Mackanin spoke Spanish, you know, just stuff, little like using little things to be like, hey, this guy seems like a good guy.
Memories.
Whatever. Or like Ryan Sandberg, is this the start of like the Philly era with Ryan Sandberg that they don't screw up by trading him? Like, yay, this is a fun narrative. Didn't happen in either case. But you still worked yourself up to like, yay, because whatever, it's a new man. This is who we got leading the team. And like the manager basically comes to, at least in some ways, define the era by era chapters of your team's history. So in this case, when you talk about your excitement level being on based on how well you know a guy, we know a lot more about Gabe Kapler than we did when he was first hired by the Phillies. Like maybe some of the stuff was known, but it wasn't known on as wide a scale as it is now. And Kapler was coming into his first managing job with the Phillies. It was just sort of like, who's this like buff tan guy who is going to be like a baseball manager who doesn't look like a baseball manager, who has this weird blog and has all these ideas about analytics and all these ideas about organic food and like, who is this guy? And you kind of just talked yourself into it because you're like, whatever. Now, all these, you know, everything that has come out about Gabe has come out, and it's apparently not problematic enough to keep him from getting a job in Major League Baseball, but it is enough for him to get a reputation. And that reputation went with him when he went to San Francisco and was hired by one of his buddies. So that doesn't, in retrospect, it doesn't surprise you, but at the same time, yeah, that there was such a strong reaction negatively for those reasons was a little surprising, because you expect it, like, Giants fans just being like, all right, there's a new manager. we're not digging too deep on him right now. It's just the news of the day and the start of another era, and it's not going to be a great era of Giants baseball. We're basically looking for a steward for a mess for a couple of years as this this franchise reconfigures and recalibrates and figures itself out. But no, everyone was really concerned about the stuff that happened off the field, which is a sign of the times and also a sign of the stuff that happened off the field, because it's not good and there should definitely be more discussions had about it. And frankly, the hiring, you know, the hiring process was deeply impacted by his previous relationship with the guy who is also at the middle of all the stories we're talking about when we talk about Gabe Kapler's problematic off the field stuff with the Dodgers when he was the director of player development. So, yeah, it was surprising because, you know, you kind of have a cynical take on what people are or are not held accountable for in this day and age. In a way, it was kind of satisfying to be like, wow, these people have enough of a sense of justice to understand that this this situation didn't really work out in a way that, holds anybody accountable. So, yeah, surprised? Yes, I was definitely surprised. That was not the reaction I was expecting.
How about you, Liz?
It was a pleasant surprise. I mean, Giants bloggers came to play.
Yes, they sure did.
They came to play.
The Athletic writers were not messing around.
No, I was happy to see it. They get to plunge forward with a lot more than we had when he started. We had some stuff, but put all together now, it feels, especially with the involvement of Farhan Zaidi, it's like, why are these two back together? Why is this allowed to happen? Given what, you know, allegedly happened before. Why is this a good idea? Why did anyone think this was a good idea? But I don't know. I'm really disappointed that he was hired at all. I'm sad for Giants fans that they have to deal with this because it was really deeply unpleasant for a lot of people, myself included. And he had to address it because Farhan Zaidi hired him again. And so neither of them could really wriggle out of it, out of talking about it like, you know, they could in Philadelphia. Because I don't believe he addressed it really in his entire time with the Phillies.
Not really.
Because I guess it was, quote unquote, still under investigation, which is, quote unquote, still happening, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
They addressed it and they addressed it badly and they had no choice but to talk about it. And that sucked. It all sucks. Like the fact that any of this is still happening is sucky. There's no other word for it. I wish I had a more mature term for it, but it really is just, what else do you say? Like I'm frustrated that he still has a job like this that in which he interacts with players at all.
I was surprised at how negative his profile is outside of Philadelphia. I always assumed that Philadelphia fans were the hardest on him, and that most of Major League Baseball, while maybe not knowing whether or not he was a good manager, at least didn't have animosity towards Gabe Kapler. But maybe it's just a San Francisco thing. Maybe it just, you know, maybe it's because of Zaidi and Kapler, the fact that they were connected in Los Angeles when all this stuff went down. If another team had hired him, I mean, let's say maybe the Angels hired Gabe Kapler, something like that. A lot of this stuff probably doesn't happen. I mean, I know it's another Los Angeles team, but I think the Zaidi connection, you know, really makes you, like you said, Liz, you know, these two guys are getting back together again. You just wonder if this is, I think a lot of people also think this seems like favoritism, you know, guy hiring a buddy rather than the most qualified manager for the job, you know, and that could be a thing too, you know. So there's a lot of negative factors that went into Gabe Kapler getting hired. I mean, when you look at it just for baseball reasons, it made a ton of sense because Gabe Kapler can grow on the job while the team stinks for 3 years. There's not going to be any expectations by fans for him to win. So, but that's the other side of that coin is that there's not going to be any winning of baseball games that's going to take some of the heat off of Gabe Kapler. You know, he's not going to be able to get to the playoffs in San Francisco to help take some of the heat off. And so that's going to be his problem down there, is that, you know, he's going to have to better hope nothing else comes out, you know, with regard to any of this stuff or anything else that happened during any of his other stops, because they're not going to be winning many baseball games there.
Yeah, and I mean, I know I've said it before, and it's just I still when this was being discussed again, when the hire was still fresh, it came up from, you know, a small but stubborn contingent of Phillies fans that Gabe Kapler is a good manager, and this was like a great hire, and things are going to go well, and the Phillies will regret firing him. And you're talking about the baseball end of things, John. I mean, yeah, he could grow on the job and you know grow with this team, and that could work out like that, but why does anyone think Gabe Kapler is a good manager? I that is something that I have yet to really understand. Like, why was there not this was that's what makes this so clearly a cronyism hire, my favorite baseball term.
Yeah, good word.
Because there's other candidates out there who could fill this same job who don't have any of this baggage attached to them. But obviously the Giants didn't hire them. They hired the guy who had a connection to the GM. So, you know, if you try to tell me, oh, because we like what Gabe did on the field. Like, you know, there's isolated patches of success, I guess, that you could just as easily come up for with reasons why they weren't Kapler's, like, to his credit, as much as you could say that they weren't because he was. What did I say first? Were or weren't? You know what I'm trying to say. There's
yeah,
a.
Yeah.
I just don't. I don't know what gets him so quickly another managing job in Major League Baseball. Like, doesn't it seem like he's more of a candidate if we were operating in real life and not this hellscape that we're in? But like, he goes somewhere and cools his heels as like an assistant bench coach or back in the front office for a minute or, you know, something like that. Not a third base coach, because he's just not like. That's not where his strengths are. But like something like that, he goes and cools his heels before another managing offer comes along. Instead, he gets one right away. And it's like, I just didn't see anything that would make me so eager to make Gabe Kapler the manager of my team.
Like, Gabe Kapler should have the jobs that Chili Davis and Hensley Mullins have right now. Like, Hensley Mullins is, I believe, still the bench coach for the Giants, who has been up for a bunch of managerial positions and never gotten them. I don't know why Hensley Mullins wouldn't have been the best coach for the best manager for this team. The bar is on the floor for the Giants right now. They're entering I admire them for spending some money on some older players and trying to make a run of it with what they had. But, you know, they're about to enter a rebuild period and it's going to be unpleasant. Like, good God, Hensley Mullins deserves a chance, even with a crappy team. I don't understand why Gabe Kapler gets this chance. It's so frustrating. Why? I'm so sorry. I don't mean to scream into the night, but it's just, I don't understand why he deserves this chance after experiencing nothing but failure in Philadelphia. Like, apparently, like, Farhan Zaidi called, you know, he got unsolicited praise. I read that he got unsolicited praise from people about Kapler. And when he called, you know, players who had been under him, who had worked with him and like that, he got a lot of positive feedback, like, which is great. What if that's all you're looking for? What is even the point of having a manager?
I have to say that when you call someone to get their opinion and they give you praise, it is not unsolicited praise. So I don't know why that was floated around. The players didn't call him and say, hey, you made a great hire. This is Rhys Hoskins of the Phillies, by the way. Gabe Kapler is a great manager. No, he called them and asked them their opinion. That's not unsolicited. That's solicited.
The only thing I can guess he meant by that is that people who he had worked with on the Phillies communicated with him or with other assistants, that is what I'm guessing. Unsolicited praise. I'm just like, Matt Klentak called this guy.
That's like splitting hairs. Or like, yeah, I'm sure there's a correct way that, but like at the same time, it just seems like it was inserted in there to make it sound like this is a much more flowery situation than it actually is. I don't know why it is the prerogative of what seems like not everyone, but a few key people who just want to prop up Gabe Kapler. Did baseball just decide that he is the next cut? He's going to lead the charge of the next generation of managers and analytical minded people and just baseball and numbers and statistics and everything. It's him. He's the golden boy of it. He's the chosen one. And then it just like in Philadelphia, records wise, performance wise, and then all this baggage comes up and they're just like, well, we still have to support Gabe and just kind of like pass him hand to hand across the country from Philadelphia to San Francisco and make sure he gets the support he needs. And by saying that there was all these like unsolicited moments of praise is just, I don't know, it's just cartoonish to me. Like that did not happen, I'm pretty sure.
He really wanted to make sure that everybody liked it. Like everybody who mattered told him that this was good. That is why he said that, because he just wanted everyone to know the fans are going to hate this, but I do not care what they think.
No. Well, we'll see.
Sorry. I have one more thought on this. And I think the people in Philadelphia who saw the firing of Gabe Kapler as a mistake, or the people who think the hiring of him by the Giants is brilliant, I think what they need to be told is that analytics doesn't die in the Philadelphia Phillies organization just because Gabe Kapler isn't here. It is not a step backwards philosophically. It may be, application wise, it's a little turn of the dial, but it's not the death of analytics. It's not the death of modern baseball. And I think by admitting that Gabe Kapler hiring was maybe a mistake, or that the firing was preemptive, by admitting that Gabe Kapler was in any way a mistake or a bad thing for the Phillies, you're saying that analytics is a bad thing. And there's people who are very, very passionate about analytics, as we all know. And they would rather stick to this than admit that anything related to modern baseball analysis is wrong. So I think you just need to be told it's okay. We're still going to do analytics. Everyone on this podcast likes analytics.
Yeah, we love it.
We're good with it. Love it. Let's use it. Might not have been being applied super strategically, but hey.
Let's use it right. No, for sure. Let's use it correctly. Gabe Kapler, I don't think, was the guy using it correctly. You know, maybe now if you get some guys in there that use it correctly, hey, these things can actually be an advantage for you. So,
guys who aren't telling their players different things.
Yeah, not giving them separate sets of pregame instructions from what they're... Yeah, maybe we do things a little differently now.
That happened to everyone.
It really did. Let's step away, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to tell you who the greatest Colt Phillies players of all time are. Our Colt fan favorites. That's based off of something we saw on the internet this week. We'll get into that next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So earlier this week, MLB.com's Todd Zielecki wrote a piece where he took a look at every team's, maybe it was a collection of MLB.com writers, and Zielecki wrote the Phillies portion of this, I think is how it went down.
But, yes, I think so too.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I was going to say, why would Todd Zielecki know the Colt fan favorite of every major league team out there? But anyway, it was a compilation of every team's Colt fan favorite. And he wrote that the Phillies fans' all-time Colt fan favorite was former backup catcher Chris Coast. Now, listen, I think we all love the Chris Coast story, obviously. An out-of-nowhere guy makes his major league debut in his 30s after spending the bulk of his career in the minor leagues and actually has some success at the big leagues. The Chris Coast story is a really nice story, but I don't think anybody remembers Chris Coast at all when you think about Phillies from those glory years, or even, you know, who are your favorite obscure Phillies of all time. Chris Coast I don't think if you gave me 50 tries, I would have come up with Chris Coast in that under those particular rules. So we're each going to give you our favorite Colt fan favorite Phillies player of all time. And Liz, let's start with you. I mean, do you agree, first of all, with Todd Zielecki's assertion that Chris Coast is the most Colt fan favorite of all time among Phillies fans?
I think that's a stretch. I mean, when I heard about this, my thought immediately went to...
No, don't say it.
She's going to say it.
I'm afraid. Is it Wilson Valdez?
No, yeah, thank God.
Exactly.
No, not mine. I thought you were going to say it.
Thank God. I did have a backup just in case.
I thought you were going to say Wilson Valdez. Exactly. Yeah,
it's got to be Wilson Valdez. I mean, it's certainly not Danny Baez, who pitched that game in front of him, that long interminable game that lasted 8 million hours that Valdez finished.
And he deserves more props than Valdez for doing
that. He does.
Like, oh, yeah. Was,
David Herndon did that once, and that was awesome.
It was, without a doubt, the best outing of Danny's bias. His career, it was the mm-hmm. longest and the best, better than he had ever done or would ever do again. But no one remembers him because he sucked. Wilson Valdez had a tiny bit of success and played in the place of Jimmy Rollins for a while. Wilson Valdez for a while was loved and loved deeply. So, yeah, he is definitely my, it's got to be him.
All right, Justin, who's yours?
I think we got to talk about what the definition is of a cult favorite player first. I mean, Wilson Valdez is a great answer because he's a guy who feels like he grounded the ball straight into the ground with the bases loaded, more so than any player in baseball history.
Those grounded to double plays so often. Wow.
And yet, he only grounded into 20 of them in 111 games in 2010. So, like, and that's the most of any season of his career. So, but that being said, the reputationally, it's just kind of like, okay, that's very cultish. Somebody who's clearly damaging the team is someone who's also held in such high regard because of one moment of high profile glory. That's, yeah, I think that's why that's a great answer. And I was a part of that cult for Wilson Valdez as well. So when we talk about Chris Coast, I mean, John, I gotta say he probably would be maybe not near the top, but he's a name I would certainly have written down if I was writing down a list of the top cult favorite players, because he, I mean, technically he was Chooch's backup, but there was a period of time where he and Chooch were splitting playing time pretty regularly. So a lot of these guys, they were on the team a lot shorter than you remember, but Coast was like a part of this team for a
minute. He was behind the plate in the game in 2007, the clinching game against the Washington Nationals where they won the National League East.
Yep. Yeah, he was 06
came in
to
as
09.
A defensive replacement. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for the Phillies. I mean, that's a chunk of time, a chunk of great Phillies history to be a part of if you're going to be a part of it. And I remember him saying in some kind of press conference that he and Chooch used to talk about how they wanted to be the two catchers on the Phillies for a long time. Obviously, they're not really in control of that. But yeah, at the moment, it was like, oh wow, the Phillies have like two solid catchers. This is kind of not an embarrassment of riches, but it was a reason that you like remembered his name. And I disagree that he would be so far off the list as to not be recalled easily. But all that being said, my answer is a catcher, and he only played 50 games for the Phillies in 2006. And he's the only one who comes to mind when I think of cult favorites, and that's Sal Fasano, because he only played in 50 games for the Phillies at 34 years old. I thought he was on the team much longer than this. Not even half of a season. Not even close to half of a season.
No, that's funny.
But he still had a fan group. He still met the fan group. He was so touched by the fact that these guys showed up wearing giant mustaches like his own, called Sal's Pals in the stands, that I think he sent them pizzas. I think something like
that
happened. Hit .243 with the Phillies, but he had four home runs. But like those are great moments to be a Phillies fan, or like any team's fan, when a guy who's reached that status, who's just like, he comes up, you just kind of just see his picture on like, you know, the Phillies signed this random catcher, and you saw his picture and everyone was like, that's our guy. Holy crap. That is our guy. Wow. He doesn't even have to do anything. Look at him. Yeah. And I bet for each of those four home runs he hit with the Phillies, that place blew up because A, people were coming out. It was 2006. We were kind of excited about the Phillies, and people want to see a guy like that do so well. I remember my friend just saying, like, Sal Fasano, you guys love Sal Fasano. My friend was an Orioles fan, and he's like, that's so crazy. He just looks like a guy who's coming up to the plate that's like getting paid in cheese steaks, and he's just like, oh, all right, boss, I'm gonna do this for you. Here we go.
Oh, that's a great one. I forgot about Sal Fasano. Your point's well taken on Chris Coast, but Sal Fasano is a classic. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, he's a less talented and a lesser tenured Pete Incaviglia, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, very
you
much.
Know, very much. I mean, I had a couple ideas too, but I don't think they're as good as Sal Fasano. I mean, if you just talk about guys who are still revered in the city but really weren't here very long, and when you think about it, didn't make much of an impact, Aaron Rowand, you know, after he smashed his face into the center field wall. I think he was here for 1 year, wasn't he? He played one season in Philadelphia. It was like 06, I think he was here, and then he was gone. But, you know, we still see that video of him running face first into the fence, you know, smashing his nose all to hell. And
06 and 07, sorry.
Okay, he was in here in 07. Okay, I didn't remember that. All right. So, I mean, I think he was sort of too popular of a player. I mean, he's too well-known of a player to, I guess, be considered a cult fan favorite. But he's the type of guy who everybody just overreacts to how great it was that he was here. Guy from the 80s that I always maybe this is more like a Dom Brown type situation, but Jeff Stone is a guy who everybody always thought was going to be great. And there were so many wacky stories surrounding him about stuff that he had said and how naive he was. And, you know, he was one of those. He was that guy who played Mexican ball, and you know, they asked him, you know, why he didn't bring his TV back from Mexico with him when he was playing Mexican ball, and he said because they only get Mexican shows. I mean, one of those type of guys who doesn't understand that a shrimp cocktail is not a drink. You know, So I mean, that's kind of the guy that I think about from my childhood. Like, Jeff Stone was so cool, and every time I get a Jeff Stone baseball card, I always set it aside to make sure that I keep it in a very special place. So those were my two ideas, but I don't like them nearly as much as I like Sal Fasano and Wilson Valdez. I think those are easily two of the best answers as far as cult heroes in Philly's history.
I mean, I'll give you this. Aaron Rowan running into that fence and smashing his face open is about as close to like rock and roll as you can get in baseball. But also, I kind of informally consider it the moment that Philly's baseball turned around. You know, obviously they didn't go to the playoffs in 2006, but I feel like I've talked about before that I really tuned out of the Phillies when I was a teenager. Like, when I was a kid, obviously I was obsessed with them, win or lose. Got interested in other things as a teenager, and, you know, I would keep kind of, you know, some track of what they were up to, but knew that that was just not a very good team at that point. Painfully average at best. And in 06, you know, that was right when I think that moment kind of like everyone was talking about it. And I was in Philadelphia, and suddenly people were, you know, talking about this catch. You know, maybe they weren't talking about the Phillies all the time yet, but they were like, oh my God, did you see this? And like, it was a catch, and Harry made the call, and, you know, he had to leave the game, and he like lost his face for Phillies baseball. This is exactly what we come to games for. Like, it was, for me, that kind of sets off the moment that I returned to Phillies baseball, just mentally, but also kind of set off this era of success. And that's why it was always like, oh, right, I forgot the cruelty of baseball in that he, you know, contractually, blah, 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 left the team after 2007 and actually was a part of the 2010 Giants team that bounced them out of the playoffs.
Oh, but I forgot about that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so he couldn't be a cult hero. I did think of one other one that really should probably get more props when you consider how many big moments he was a part of during that run. That's Eric Bruntlett. I think Eric Bruntlett just is quiet, but he had a... he was a part... I mean, You go back and look at... He turned a triple play while he was here. He scored the winning run in Game 3 of the World Series. He was on base in that restarted Game 5 of the World Series, and I think scored the first run when Jason Wirth hit the blooper into center field. I mean, he was a part of like some really, really big. Oh, he was on base when Jimmy Rollins hit his walk off double in Game 4 against the National League Championship Series in 2009. I mean, he somehow found himself in the right place and the right time in like most of the biggest moments in Philly's
history.
He just wandered into Philly's history by accident. Like, how do we not talk about Eric Bruntlett more often?
Because he's Eric Bruntlett. Those are words that just came out of your mouth, John.
I gotta tell you, John, you're not wrong.
No.
You're not wrong. But Wilson Valdez.
But let me say you're wrong about this. Yeah,
Wilson Valdez was a utility infielder who never really produced at the plate, and who pitched that one inning and will live forever for that reason. Eric Bruntlett, lousy utility infielder.
Yeah,
terrible player on the Brad Lidge deal.
Right.
He comes here, he has the triple play, which is, as much as you just cited those moments that he was a part of, that's the thing you will remember about him forever. I don't know. I kind of put that game-ending, Mets beating, unassisted triple play. That's probably about on the same level of an accomplishment as Wilson Valdez pitching.
Yeah.
You know, as, and likelihood. Probably less likely. And yet, and yet, Eric Bruntlett sucking is what comes to my mind first.
Yeah.
Whereas,
really
like, Wilson Valdez maybe didn't suck as much. Just quick, I took a quick ancillary look at their batting averages with the Phillies. Wilson Valdez topped out at like 258 one season. Eric Brunlett hit 217 in 2008 with the Phillies. His highest batting average with the Phillies.
Yeah.
So, like, Wilson, he probably sucked a little more, but.
Wilson Valdez gets that cult status because he was, for a while, pitched as a replacement for Jimmy Rollins.
Was he?
Do you guys not remember this?
I thought it was for Chase Utley.
No.
I thought it was.
Brunlett?
Brutal.
No. Wilson Valdez.
Wilson Valdez.
Brutal.
I don't remember that at all.
He was a good defender, and he could throw the arm.
Defender.
Like, he did play for Chase Utley at points, but no one was ever talking about replacing Chase Utley. It was when he played for Jimmy Rollins that people were. I can't believe this is seared into my brain. Mm. This was talk radio fodder.
Yeah. I remember that afternoon.
Thank God.
Wow.
I'm like, I'm not, someone else out there make sure I'm not going insane. But this was an actual talk. I wrote about it in The Athletic like a million years ago now.
Wow. Goodness gracious. Well, I'm glad that missed my radar entirely.
I do want to mention one player really quickly that I wanted that no one remembers but me. But I'm hoping that in the coming year on continued success that Justin and I are able to bring him to light. And that's Mike Sweeney. You guys remember Mike Sweeney?
Oh, the hugger.
Yes,
Mike Sweeney,
the hugger.
With the hug.
That's what you remember him for. Mike Sweeney was my backup if someone else took Wilson Valdez. Mike Sweeney's my backup.
Wow.
I love him.
You guys, neither one of you was going to say Sal Fasano. I'm impressed.
He is
Liz,
so much
right.
of a Justin player.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He truly wants for me.
Oh, that's great. All right. When we come back, we'll talk about the bullpen a little bit because the Braves signed the best free agent reliever on the market. And if we have time, we'll get to this story out of Japan, a story about honor and awards and how nobody deserved one in Japan as far as pitching is concerned. We'll get into all that up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So, guys, the Atlanta Braves made the first big free agent signing of the offseason. They went and signed San Francisco Giants closer Will Smith, and he's going to team up with Mark Melancon at the back of their bullpen. And
neat.
Fantastic. I mean, they did give up a second-round draft pick and $500,000 in international money because he was given a qualifying offer by San Francisco and gave him 3 years and $40 million. So that's a lot. That's a lot for a veteran relief pitcher. And given the Phillies' track record with signing veteran relief pitchers, I don't even know if they were swimming in those waters for Will Smith. But no doubt, if Smith is healthy, he's going to be really good. Bryce Harper has terrible career numbers against him, and that's one of the reasons why I'm sure they went out and got him. Yeah, no doubt. It's just fantastic news. So I guess we can kind of talk quickly about what this means for the Phillies' possible bullpen next year and how they're going to shake this together, because there's not a lot of great options in free agency. I mean, Drew Pomeranz is out there, but it seems like everybody wants him to be their lefty out of the bullpen, and he's going to be quite good. I think a lot of people are talking up Dellin Betances because of his connection with Joe Girardi, but Betances is coming off a season in which he tore his Achilles late in the season. That was after missing most of the season with a shoulder injury. There are some other guys out there, like Daniel Hudson, who closed for the Nationals and was on the mound for the last pitch of the World Series. He'd probably be an upgrade. They could also make some trades. I mean, Ken Giles' name is out there. Raisel Iglesias of the Reds is out there. Ian Kennedy's name is out there. I don't know that there's a lot of great options. I also think, guys, what we're going to be seeing, and I know you guys are going to throw China at me, is Nick China, like glasses.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not the country. Like,
so did we go to China together?
No. Like plates and dishes and whatnot. I think you're going to see some combination of Nick Pivetta and Vince Velasquez in the bullpen next year, right from the beginning of the season.
I love
it. They're going to use those two guys as bullpen additions this offseason.
Sure. So, pitch that. Oh, please, Matt Klentak, please come out on a Tuesday afternoon with a bunch of Phillies logos behind you and sit at that little table we've seen so many people come out and sit at, and please pitch to Phillies Nation that your big bullpen additions are two pitchers you already have and who everyone hates. Please, I really want that afternoon to occur because it's going to be massively entertaining. I don't even think it would be a total for like one of them. I think Vince Velasquez could be a potentially good reliever, but that's just not gonna fly for people. Like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just not gonna.
I don't think it's gonna
that's
fly.
That's just
either.
Not gonna work. And at this point, though, like with relievers, I know people were already saying, "Oh, Phillies blew it. They let Will Smith go to the Braves." I wonder how many high profile signings. I guess especially with more expensive relievers are only done to keep pitchers away from other teams. That seems like a stretch. But also, after David Robertson being only the latest example of great bullpen moves that don't pan out because of reason X, you know, I've just come to this conclusion that at this point, any reliever can be good. Most relievers will be bad. And yeah, Will Smith and Mark Melanson sounds very fearsome, and I bet that they will be effective, and Will Smith's numbers against Bryce Harper's, I'm sure you're right, did play a factor into that, or were at least a nice cherry on top of the acquisition. I don't worry that much about the bullpen until the season actually begins. We've been doing this too long, John. Liz,
I know.
We've been doing this too long. We've seen too many bullpens assembled that were supposed to be great or at least effective that were just nothing. Just,
yep.
Just fart noises for 162 games. And you were just like, why did we do this? Why did we spend all this money? This guy didn't even pitch an inning. We're never going to see David Robertson in a Phillies uniform. Whatever. Coming back from that. Point being, I have a feeling the Phillies do make a signing or two or you know, like you said, Drew Pomeranz, Dylan Betances, like there's other names out there that can bring people back down to earth or make them feel like at least there was an attempt made to compete with the in-division acquisition of the best reliever on the market. But at the same time, so many X factors, so many injuries, so many ineffective. You know what? I'm going to mention this just because it happened to come across my desk this table I'm sitting at. The signing of Troy Percival in 2004. John, do you know anybody?
Oh, I remember Troy Percival, longtime closer for the Angels, yeah.
I'm sure you remember Troy Percival. It's just, there's this big deal made out of the fact that he was on the market, and he was this big closer on the market. And there's tons of examples like this through all of history. This is just the one I happened to read about. He gets taken out to dinner. He gets shown the town of Detroit, by Tigers Hall of Famer Al Kaline and the owner of the team at the time. And they take him out and they show him everywhere. And he's supposed to go meet with the Indians. He's supposed to go meet with the Cubs, but he just sees everything he needs to see. And he just calls off every other meeting and signs a 2-year, $12 million deal with the Tigers. And everyone's just like, holy crap. And like the Tigers are like, we just signed Pudge Rodriguez last year. Like, this is, we're a serious team. This is unbelievable. And Troy Percival winds up pitching 1 year with the Tigers. You may have heard me say that it was a 2-year deal, but he played 1 year with the Tigers. He had a 5.76 ERA coming out of the bullpen. He pitched in 25 innings. So,
wow.
I mean, this is just one of many, many examples of the biggest deal in the world being made about a reliever signing somewhere, in which case it just ended with high numbers and hurt feelings. So I can't worry myself as much about this. Like, yes, do I want to see the Phillies strengthen their bullpen? Yes, but I consider all of those strengths theoretical until we are at least 3 months into the season. I don't know how else to approach this at this point.
I also want to say, I don't think the Phillies were in on this at all at any point.
Troy Percival, you mean?
He's
like 50 years old.
McClintock has said, not to beat writers who he seems to be avoiding, but to the radio, that they want to avoid losing draft picks at all costs. And so that means that anyone with a qualifying offer, the Phillies are going to be wary about, which is so stupid, I could choke. So... That is all I have to say about the bullpen, because they need to go out there and actually get guys. And if they're already limiting themselves, that's just bad.
I'm perfectly willing to give up a draft pick for even a guy like Zach Wheeler, you know, somebody like that, you know, who I think can really help. I'm less inclined to give up a draft pick for a reliever on a qualifying offer.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that.
Unless it's Mariano Rivera or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, unless it's like one of the top two or three relievers on the market. For Will Smith, he's a good reliever. No doubt about the fact he's a good reliever. He's probably going to win some games for the Atlanta Braves this year. But, man, that's, you know, on top of the contract they gave him, and Atlanta going out and really setting the market for relievers, that's like Ruben Amaro stuff right there, man. That's Ruben Amaro going out and signing Jonathan Papelbon. What was it, a couple of days before he could have had him for less based on there was some kind of like roster manipulation rule or something like that, that if Ruben Amaro had waited 36 hours, he could have had Jonathan Papelbon for cheaper. I'm trying to remember exactly what that was.
Their negotiations with Ryan Madsen at that point.
Yeah.
We're not old by any stretch.
No, I think it was, the rumor was that they agreed to a deal with Ryan Madsen, and then it got pulled back and it never happened, and they got Papelbon, and it was that whole thing was bizarre. So,
and an era of Phillies success unprecedented in its time began.
Right. That 2012 to 2016 run, man. Woo, boy, that was fun. All right, last thing before we get out of here. This is a great story out of Japan. The Sawamura, I think is how you pronounce it, is their version of the Cy Young Award, the Sawamura. And they did not think that a pitcher rose to a deserving enough level this season, so they just didn't give out the award at the end of the season. It would be as if we looked at all of the pitchers, if the Baseball Writers Association of America, and I don't know who gives out the Sawamura in Japan, whether it's writers. It sounds to me like it's the league, but I don't know that for a fact. But, you know, they're pointing to the fact that, you know, honor and respect is a very big deal in Japan, obviously. And the fact that whoever gives this award out did not feel that any pitcher did well enough to earn the award that year. So they just decided not to give it out. I think that's it's cool, actually. You know, I mean, like, it's like in 1987 when Steve Bedrosian won the Cy Young Award for the Phillies. I mean, you look at the other names that were on there. It's a pretty lackluster group of pitchers, and they all had terrible season. That would have been a prime year where nobody gets the award. I mean, Rick Sutcliffe came in second, and he had like a 3.68 ERA that year. Rick Rueschel came in third, had a 3.09 ERA that year. And you had guys like Hershiser and Dwight Gooden and Nolan Ryan down there further down the ballot. But Steve Bedrosian winning the Cy Young Award as a guy with a, you know, he played for a fourth place team as its closer. He had 40 saves. Great. But I mean, it was one of the worst Cy Young votes of all time. And that would have been a season where you could just say, nah, we're good. We don't need it. So what do you guys make? Liz, what do you make of this story out of Japan where they just decided not to give out their version of the Cy Young Award because nobody deserved it?
Well, it's given out. It's a five-man committee of retired pitchers give it out. Yeah, there's a story on the Japan Times about it. This is the first time it's happened since 2000, and it's only happened five times since the award was established. So it's interesting that this can happen. You know, I mean, I don't know if I have that much more to say about it, because I don't believe anyone would, you know, with maybe the incredibly rare exception, I don't think you could find a year since in the past, 10, 20, where someone hasn't been deserving of the award for one reason or another.
Yeah. I mean, you could look at like a guy like Rick Porcello probably shouldn't have won, but Justin Verlander probably should have won and was a deserving candidate that. Yeah, there have been guys who probably should not have won the Cy Young or MVP award, but the guys underneath them probably should have.
Yuck.
I love this. Mm-hmm. I love it. This is an award. This isn't an obligation.
Yeah, that's true.
This is something that's given out because somebody earned it, not because somebody had to get it. And even more interesting, this is named after a player who was killed in World War II. For the record, and there's a set of criteria. You have to start at least 25 games. You have to have a certain ERA under 250. You have to pitch at least 200 innings. Your winning percentage has to be a certain amount. You have to throw a certain number of complete games. So like there's
benchmarks, you
numbers
gotta hit.
Involved.
I didn't realize.
I do want to point out that it's named after a guy who died in World War II for the Imperial Army of Japan.
Ah, yes.
I just wanted to.
Well, there you go.
You have to. That's yeah. You really want to be specific.
Worth mentioning. Yes.
Did he? Did so? In other words, he probably died at the hands of an American soldier or two, or airman,
most likely.
Or whatever. Yeah.
This conversation has taken a turn.
It has. It's like a Trevor Strunk conversation here, man.
I will follow this up seamlessly.
How did Sawamura die? Let's figure that out.
God.
No, I do think it is. It's excellent to have an award that is not automatically handed out every year. I think that makes it that much more of an achievement for the person who does win it. And yeah, I think five times since 1947 that it hasn't been handed out, like that's enough times to believe that, like, yeah, you know, we didn't have a guy this year. We just didn't. But also, you know, that's many, many times that they did. So it's not unachievable. You're not going to run into that every time, but there should be more awards like this. There should be awards with even tighter. I mean, it's like the Triple Crown, you know, like not every guy is going to get that. And it's a huge deal when somebody does. We're all watching when somebody does. So yeah, I think there should be more awards of this criteria, and the awards we do have should be harder to get. I think that's a great idea. So yeah, this is very, very cool to me.
By the way, in 1943, Sawamura enlisted in the Japanese Imperial Army. He was killed in battle near Yakushima when his ship was torpedoed by the USS Sea Devil near the end of World War II. So there you have it. I think that's an amazing story. That's fantastic. This is something one of you guys should write about for your publications that people read. this is just, that's awesome stuff. Well, listen, any final thoughts, Justin, before we get out of here?
I guess what I want to say is that I can't wait to see what the next level of baseball cheating looks like. I feel like we went through the steroid era, when we were younger, and now we have this going on with various other degrees of cheating in between. And, we every decade or so have something that forces us to look back on the last era of baseball and wonder, hey, was any of that for real? And I think those reality checks are healthy for us mentally, also disgusting for the sport of baseball. And this week has been tough for me to even just kind of come to terms with why baseball exists and we continue to watch it. But
what's really going to help is the 3-year work stoppage that's coming, so that'll help cleanse the palate, I think.
Oh boy, there's a reckoning coming, and I think we all know it. And until then, we're gonna have cartoon villains running the show, so we got to get used to ideas like no more minor league baseball or a balloon race to determine the winner of the Cy Young Award. So get used to that, people.
I'd be into the balloon race thing. Liz, any final thoughts?
I don't have sports to keep me happy anymore. So I'm looking for substitutes. If you have a hobby you'd like to suggest, please let me know. The Eagles suck, man. The Eagles suck, and it was unpleasant.
That was a bad football game. That was bad football, and the NFL is as unwatchable as Major League Baseball is right now. So, but we'll get into all that on another episode of this fine podcast, and maybe next time we'll also have some actual legitimate Phillies news to report. In the meantime, make sure you're checking out the Good Fight podcast feed. Make sure you're checking out all of Justin's work at Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs. Make sure you're checking all of Liz's great stuff out at Yahoo Sports, and make sure you're checking out thegoodfight.com every week, as I'm sure most of you always do. Leave a rating and a review at the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, and check out our Patreon, where we've got new stuff going up there, some bonus content for you kids. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.